Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Carol Dixon, and we're going to be talking about her father, a man named Jacob DeShazer. And hey, this is a heartwarming story. It's a story of a young man who joined the Army before the Second World War. Of course, he was with General Doolittle's raid over Tokyo. It was they actually took off from the Hornet on the 18th of April, 1942. That's a little over 3 months after Pearl Harbor. And, of course, this was to take an attack into the heartland of the enemy. And the last thing the Japanese expected, was that they were going to be attacked, that Tokyo and other cities were going to be attacked by a number of American bombers. Of course, it was more symbolic than anything, but what it did was, of course, show the vulnerability of Japan, because, as the book will tell you, the people of Japan were totally dedicated to the emperor. They believed God was on their side. The emperor was God's representative. They were going to fight to the last man, and, of course, the last person to die would be Emperor Hirohito. He would, of course, take his life after all the other soldiers had been killed. But that wasn't the way that it worked out. It didn't work out that way at all. But, of course, this is a heartwarming story of what happened to one of those men who was in that flight. So why don't you tell the story, Carol, Jacob DeShazer's daughter, and, of course, you were raised as a child of a missionary. Why don't you tell the story?
Well, I'm really happy to be on the radio. Thank you for calling me. My father, Jacob DeShazer, he was one of the Doolittle Raiders, and they bombed Japan. His target was Nagoya, and after they bombed, they took off for China, and they were going to land there and try to get into the safe, where they could be safe in China. But since they had to leave early, it was dark and they couldn't tell where to land, and they ran out of gas, so they had to parachute out. And he was able to parachute safely. He landed in China, but it was occupied China, and he was captured, and they got him in a Japanese prison, and he was tortured and starved for 40 months. But during that time, he had a lot of hatred for the enemy, he was almost dead, and one of his companions had died. And the Lord somehow miraculously, after one of his companions died, a Bible came in, and he was able to read that Bible, and the Lord was able to change his heart. And he learned to love his captors, and the main thing is he learned to forgive them. He told the Lord if the Lord would save his life, he'd go back to Japan as a missionary.
Which is, of course, what he did, and it's a heartwarming story. It's a very, very touching story. And I don't think you can actually read this story without having an emotional reaction to it. It's not a complicated story. It's not written in great prose, but it's a story of one man's faith and the transforming power of our Lord. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this afternoon is Carol Dixon, and she was the daughter of a missionary. and a missionary to Japan. Her father had been with a sergeant. He had been the bombardier on one of the planes that took off from the USS Hornet on the 18th of April 1942 to bomb Japan. And of course, the planes could get off of the aircraft carrier, but there was no way they could land. And so the idea was that they would simply fly from the aircraft carrier. They would fly then over Japan. They would go on into China and try to get into the Free China area, the part that was not controlled by the Japanese, and of course then that they would hopefully get back to the United States. Well, apparently some of the planes did, but there were several of them that actually went down, and they went down, of course, in the part of China that was occupied by the Japanese. And Carol's father, his name was Jacob DeShazer, is it? That's pronounced?
Yes, it's Jacob DeShazer.
Dr. Jacob DeShazer was captured by the Japanese and was horribly mistreated and starved for 40 minutes. And tell our listeners, and of course these are new people now who are listening, just came on board, about some of his experiences when he was in prison there, because he was pretty badly treated, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was hardly given anything to eat, rotten potato peelings and fish heads and just all kinds of mistreatment and torture and constantly being told they were going to get killed, and there was lice and bed bugs and rats, and they're just, you know, they were cold in the wintertime and hot in the summer. Part of the time they were in solitary, so they couldn't really associate with each other. And he had a lot of bitterness and hatred toward the Japanese guards, and they weren't getting along very well at all.
But of course the Japanese treated their own prisoners very badly as well, didn't they?
Yeah. So they had a pretty hard time, and he was getting weaker and weaker and sick, and they all were. And he was getting to the point where he really felt like he was pretty close to dying.
And one of them actually did die. One of the officers died, didn't he?
One of his guys, Meter was his name, he died. And right after he died, the Emperor of Japan heard about it. And he said, you know, you need to treat those prisoners better. So they got treated a little bit better. And the main thing that happened was they allowed him to get a little bit of literature.
Hold that just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, our guest is Carol Dixon. Her father, Jacob DeShazer, has an amazing story. And, of course, your father's in his 90 years at present time. He's not able to come on the radio and talk about it, but his daughter is, and, of course, they circulate the book. They hope one day to actually have a movie of this amazing experience. Because he's in prison, he's given a Bible, and he starts to read the Bible, and it just really changes his whole perspective, doesn't it?
Yes, it really did change him. He realized that there was a purpose to life, and that God's way was to love and to forgive, and that there was something to live for. And he decided that was what he wanted to do. And he told the Lord if the Lord would save him and spare his life and help him get out of prison, that he promised to be a missionary.
And of course, he was going to be a missionary to Japan, where he had been treated so badly.
Right.
So eventually, of course, the war ends, and he has a chance to come back to the United States, and he takes some Bible courses, and then he's going to go back to Japan. He doesn't really speak the language at all, but he put together some sort of a track, and that track circulated a million copies. And how did he get that track put together in Japanese so the Japanese could read it?
Yeah, well, there was several organizations that were very, very interested in his story, and one of them put together a track of his testimony. It was called I Was a Prisoner of Japan, and they got that translated in all different languages. But, of course, they translated it into Japan, and they were able to circulate that in Japan, and it really stirred up his story and really created a lot of opportunities for my parents to witness in Japan. And one of the persons who received that track, his name was called Mitsuo Fuchida, Captain Mitsuo Fuchida. And I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he was the man who led the attack on Pearl Harbor. And he was
350 planes that he commanded, and they were the ones, of course, that attacked Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, he actually did got one of these tracks. You tell the story.
He was able to receive one of the tracks. My father didn't hand it to him. It was another missionary at a train station was handing them out, and he received it and put it in his pocket and thought he'd read it later. And then he did read it later, and he was very impressed with how someone could be treated so poorly and find forgiveness, and that there must be something in that Bible that he read that can change a life. And he decided at that point he was going to get himself a Bible, and he was going to read it and see what was in it that was so life-changing. And when he read the Bible, he decided that was the change in his life that he wanted, was the forgiveness that God gave.
And so your father and the captain actually became good friends
Fuchida.
Down the line, right?
Yeah.
Captain Fuchida.
So after he read the Bible and accepted Christ in his life, he decided he wanted to meet my father, and they were able to meet each other. And it was a wonderful meeting, and they decided to have meetings together where they would both tell their testimonies. And they were able to draw really, really large crowds in Japan.
And they really hundreds, if not thousands, of Japanese did convert to Christianity as a result of your father's ministry and then Captain Fuchida's ministry.
Right.
And of course, you were actually over there at one time. The first time, I think that there was just your oldest brother, Paul, and then your father went back a number of times, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, when my parents first went to Japan as missionaries, they had their first son, Paul, was born. And then they had two more boys, and then I was born. And I was born when they were living in Japan. And I like to tell people I was made in Japan. And then my sister was born later on when they lived in Kentucky. So they have five children.
So. All right, fine. And of course, your father was back and forth to Japan. When did he stop going back over there?
They were missionaries in Japan for 30 years.
30 years after the Second World War.
Yeah. And then after they retired, when they left Japan, they still were going around to different churches and speaking. And it's really only been about this last year that they've quit doing that.
Well, now you're going to try. You're hoping to get a motion picture telling this story together, aren't you?
Right. Well, we've had a lot of interest in this story, and right now the Fuchida family and the Fuchida family are working together to see if we can tell this story of the two men. And we're going to call the right now we're going to the working title for the movie we're going to call it Forgiven.
And are there some people in Hollywood who are interested in helping with that?
Well, we hope they are, and we haven't quite gotten that far yet. We're just at the beginning stages of putting the package together of what we want to do. And we've had several meetings and ideas and different things. And we're also trying to write a new book about my father, because the first book was written in 1950. So we're trying to get that done, too. So there's lots of projects that we're working on, and we're just praying that, we really feel like the Lord wants us to share this story in a bigger way and try to get it out there to people that need to learn. Need to hear this message.
Well, I think it's a touching book, even though it's very, very simply written. Why it really tells a story really of terrible suffering and terrible deprivation, and of course, really the brutality of many of the Japanese guards. And then as your father tried to befriend the guards, they just didn't quite know how to react.
Right. Well, when somebody does you wrong, they expect you to fight back, and that was what he was doing when he first went to prison. But after reading the Bible and letting the Lord change his life, change his heart, he found that, you know, treating people God's way with love and forgiveness, and it really is different.
Well, of course, the thing is that the Japanese method was simply brutality or discipline by punishment or by heading or by beating. And, of course, he mentioned in the book that, you know, for instance, a superior officer will go up and slap an inferior officer, and the inferior officer will slap an enlisted man, and that is to be accepted. This is how the society works. And, of course, the brutality even of the Japanese towards their own men in the military who disobeyed an order and done something displeased a superior was really total ruthlessness. And that's the way that the Japanese worked. But, of course, when they lost the war, they couldn't understand this because suddenly their whole religious belief was shattered. I mean, after all, Hirohito was God. He was God's representative here on Earth. He was God himself. And, of course, they were all going to fight to the death, and they really would have. But they didn't have that opportunity to. And suddenly, Japan, this government favored, this nation favored by God, a very special nation, suddenly is defeated. And they just couldn't accept this. And after that, they were really looking for something, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. There was a real void in Japan. And during that time, the missionaries really, when they would plan a meeting, people would just come by the hundreds and thousands. And when my father and Captain Fujita, when they would, you know, ask people, do you want to find the Lord? Do you want us to help you? You know, raise your hand. And they would just have hundreds of people raise their hand. And people were very sincere, wanting to know more, because there was such a void and such an emptiness and such a feeling of defeat. That they just really saw the hope in the message.
And, of course, the fact that this American soldier would care enough about the Japanese to go back after the war to try to bring them to a personal relationship with God. This was something I'm sure in some respects was hard for them to understand, but they wanted to know what your father had that they didn't have, because this wasn't part of their culture.
Right, and they really didn't understand. When they first went over to Japan, they were on a ship, and about 100 newspaper men met them at the ship.
100 newspaper men meeting your father.
And they said, "We want to talk to you." And they said, "What happened to you? You were in prison, and they beat you on the head, and they mistreated you, and you were really tortured and everything. What happened?" And my dad says, "I think some of them thought I got hit on the head a little bit too hard."
Well, of course, it was totally contrary to the way that the Japanese looked at the world. And, of course, this was so fascinating, not only that your father could forgive them, but that he would come back, and he wanted to help the Japanese people to transform their lives as well. And, of course, it was almost as if your father had truly a mystical experience, his description of what happened in prison. And then, of course, what happened after he had accepted the Lord really is a very, very touching story.
Mm-hmm. It's very simple and very easy to understand. And, you know, it's not about a denomination and anything. It's just, you know, he read the Bible and he saw the truth and he accepted it, and it changed his life. It was that simple. And it's something that happens, you know, today. We don't have to make it any more complicated than that.
I know. Of course, if you read the Bible and you accept God's word, why, it really can transform your life. Well, Carol, we've got sort of a hum on the line. If I'm going to have to go to a break here, and if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to hang up, and then, of course, my producer will call you right back, okay?
Okay.
Okay, fine.
You want me to hang up?
I want you to hang up, and we'll call you right back.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Carol Dixon, and of course she's the daughter of Jacob DeShazer, who was one of the pilots, one of the people who flew with General Doolittle. He was, of course, General Doolittle was in the first plane, and of course Jacob was in the last plane. But of course they were the ones who flew to Japan and bombed not only Tokyo, but of course Jacob's target was somewhere south of there, and they actually hit the oil storage depots, things of that sort. Of course, Japan was really short on oil at the time, and I'm sure they were infuriated, of course, when they blew up this refinery and destroyed large parts of their oil. So, of course, initially the Americans were treated very, very badly, but it was very interesting to me that Tojo, General Tojo, intervened. He didn't, of course, want the The Americans executed. There were some Japanese who wanted to execute them, but General Tojo intervened and said, no, we shouldn't do that. And even the Emperor of Japan intervened on their behalf when they were being so badly treated. Isn't that true?
Yes. Yes, they did. And especially after one of their comrades died, the Emperor of Japan heard about it and told them to treat them better. So they started getting a bath once a month and a little bit of literature and a little bit better food. So they were grateful for that.
But, of course, nobody really knows where that Bible came from. Somebody just brought it to the
they really don't know where it came from, but they think it might have come from some missionary, some old missionary that perhaps had died or whatever, that they had gotten into maybe their home. And because there was also some theology books and different things. So they think they got some books from a Christian home, and the Bible was one of them.
Well, now, of course, I think, what were there, 8 of them that survived in these 2 planes, and what, 3 of them were killed? And
8 of them were captured. They were from 2 different airplanes. And 3 of them were executed, and one of them starved to death. So only 4 came home.
But, of course, the Japanese really could not believe that they were going to lose the war. In fact, they kept insisting that Japan was losing the war almost up until the very end. Because this is impossible for the Japanese to believe it. Their culture said that they could not win. They could not lose. They were a superior race. They were a superior culture. They were superior to these barbarians in the West. In fact, their ideas of America, they really sort of imagined people were living as the cowboys had in the past. And apparently when your father and the others tried to tell them what America was like, they just couldn't believe it. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Well, the emperor, they felt like he was God, and that you know, that they had God on their side, and that they couldn't do any wrong, and so they really believed in that, and they were really disappointed when they found that they couldn't win.
In fact, I think that they were just totally shattered, because everything they believed in up to that point was proved to be wrong.
Right.
And, of course, here the Americans are coming in. The Americans are going to occupy the country. The Americans have won the war, and the Japanese had virtually given unconditional surrender, other than the fact, of course, that the emperor was not to be tried as a war criminal. It was interesting that Tojo was tried, and even though he had intervened on the part of the Americans, he himself was executed for war crimes. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295 if you're here in the Central Coast of California. And if you have a question or comment about what we're talking about, this amazing story of Jacob DeShazer, why, of course, give us a call. But, you know, of course, you have this feeling as I read this book. I'm old enough to have lived through a number of wars, in the Second World War and the Korean War and the Vietnam War and, of course, the First Gulf War and now the Second Gulf War, and how easy it is to really be such an enthusiast for war. And I'm sure the Japanese people were enthusiastic about the war. In fact, they were convinced that they were on the right. The Americans had started the war, and, of course, they couldn't understand that many people in the West believed that they had actually started the war, that the attack on Pearl Harbor brought on the war. But people always have such different attitudes. You point out that initially, when your dad was first captured, there was not an intense hatred on the part of the Japanese towards the Americans, but there was as the war drew on. Is that right?
Yeah, they did. They were, you know, enemies, and they hated each other. And
I think this is really something that's so important. You have to understand how everything is done to make you hate the enemy. Like, they're doing everything they can to make the people over in the Middle East hate America today. And just as everything is being done here in the United States to make us hate the people in the Middle East. And even some poor Iranians who live in this country, or people with dark skin, or obviously from the Middle East, are somehow taught as the enemy. They may be American citizens. They may have lived here all their lives. But it's amazing how war brings out the worst in people.
Mm-hmm. It does. It's just, there's no way to win. And one of my dad's favorite Bible verses is, you know, 1 Corinthians 13. And
hold that thought.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 gripping hours of the story of a government onslaught into a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIB-WAR.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, people often ask me what they can do about what's going on in the world today, and what can I do? I'm just one person. Well, one of the things you can do is get educated about our Constitution and the fact that we are a republic and not a democracy. You've been lied to in your schools. You're being lied to by our political leaders, and there's all the difference in the world between a republic and a democracy, because under a democracy, the government can't do whatever it wants to, and it can't plunge us into wars the way it does, and it can't really take on control of the educational system, and it can't have a war against drugs and cancer and poverty. These are not the functions of the federal government. There's an Institute of the Constitution meeting. It's going to be every Saturday morning. If you'd like to know more, call 877-448-5798. That's 877-448-5798. Get involved with the Institute of the Constitution. Spend a few weeks, learn about the Constitution, and help us save America, because if you don't, who will? And if not now, when? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and if you're out across America, you have a question or comment about this truly amazing story about an American prisoner who went back after the Second World War to bring the gospel, the Christian gospel, to the Japanese people, and had a tremendous impact. And, of course, one of the men who was converted was a Captain Fuchida, who had led the raid, the Japanese raid on Pearl Harbor. So what a wonderful story. The American who had been part of the General Doolittle's raid on Tokyo, the commander of the Japanese forces that had attacked Pearl Harbor, the two of them standing on the podium together, witnessing in their belief in the divinity of Jesus Christ. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I think it's an amazing story of these two people, one American, one Japanese, of the impact that they had on so many lives in Japan after the war. So basically, whatever happened to Captain Fuchida?
Well, he became a Christian, and he met my father and decided he wanted to be a missionary. He really felt like he had something to say to people, and he would go around Japan and witness, but he really felt like he wanted to come to the United States to witness, because he felt like he wanted to tell his story and his testimony and ask for forgiveness, and felt like possibly he would have a bigger impact in America than Japan. So he became a missionary in America for quite a few years and brought his children over. They became American citizens. And and he was quite effective. He went to Hawaii and to Pearl Harbor and asked for forgiveness and brought them a Bible and said, you know, I brought you bombs and destruction and hate, and I'm really sorry, but I have learned that the Bible and what's in the Bible and the choosing to love and to forgive is really the best.
And, of course, I think the lesson really is so apropos today as America embarks on another war or series of wars. And, you know, war is not going to solve the problem. We're not going to change the hearts of the people in the Middle East with bombs and, depleted uranium shells and of course, hand-to-hand combat. You only create hatred that way. I mean, the message of the gospel will accomplish so much more than anything else we're doing, and yet we're not doing that. In fact, we're certainly not a very good Christian testimony in the way we're going about what's going on over there. And I think everybody in the audience has to realize that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And whether you support the war or whether you don't support the war, understand that the history of all wars is that men never are fighting for the reasons that they believe in. The Japanese believing they were fighting for an immortal emperor. In other words, an emperor who was really the representative of God. He was God himself. And of course, we know from many of the instances where the Japanese just refused to surrender. They would fight to the death because they really believed in the emperor. They were willing to get into their planes and crash them into our battleships and to our destroyers and cruisers. And they were the kamikaze pilots. In fact, your father actually had an opportunity to witness to some of the kamikaze pilots, didn't he?
Yes, he did, and he was able to even, one of them was going to get married and asked my dad to marry him, and all his kamikaze pilot friends came and they sang the kamikaze song and at the wedding at the church. It was really quite interesting, but yeah, my dad had quite an influence on different Japanese people, and a lot of them were military people that really wanted to change, you know, make a change in their life.
What was it like being brought up in Japan? I mean, how long were you there? How old were you, when you actually came back to America for good?
Well, I was born there, and I was 18 years old when I left Japan, and I was about in first grade before I started speaking English. My parents would speak English to me, but we had, you know, we were living amongst the Japanese and had Japanese friends, and my siblings all spoke Japanese, so we all spoke Japanese, but our parents would speak English to us. But we'd always answer back in Japanese.
Well, of course, you know, it's amazing how smart little kids are. They can learn all sorts of foreign languages.
Yeah, yeah. And but we really just lived amongst the Japanese and loved them, and they loved us back, and we really had a neat relationship. And I just love Japanese people.
Well, of course, you know, they have such a different culture, a different sense of values. I mean, the family is so important there, and of course, the structure of society is so important. People are really sort of totally subservient to the structure of society and the government, aren't they, to this day?
Yeah, they conform, but many of them are, there's a lot of changes going on, and they're still, you know, I think they're still seeking, and they're not as receptive to the gospel the way that they were right after the war. But
there is a cadre, a small cadre then of Christians in China, in Japan, that still adhere to the faith that your father brought to them.
Yes, there is, and there are some wonderful, wonderful, faithful Japanese Christians there.
Well, I think, you know, of course, as Japan became increasingly affluent and of course, became the second greatest economy in the entire world, and it appeared that Japan, you know, was really a major force in the world and closely aligned with America, but people didn't need God anymore. It's really bad times when you're wondering what life's all about and when life just seems to have no meaning. It's at that time you're willing to begin to question and ask what is life about, and maybe you will begin to read the scriptures and understand that really the only thing that gives life meaning is the scriptures themselves.
Right, and my father, you know, was raised in a Christian home, but he never really saw a need for him to become a Christian, and it really wasn't until he was in the Japanese prison that he started to think, you know, what causes people to hate each other so much, and what is life all about? And he really had to almost go to that prison in order for him to come face to face with what life was all about and find God.
Well, you know, this is why I do what I do 5 hours a day, to try to make people realize that the comfortable society and comfortable life they think that they have, really is not real. In fact, we're in real trouble, and it may very well be that we're going to lose all the wonderful material things we have and the material security that we have. And, of course, the only thing that is going to give them any real security or eternal security is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And even though we don't necessarily preach that every time we do a program, that is the underlying message that we try to get out. You can't get people to begin to believe they have to buy life insurance until you can convince them they're going to die. And with many people, you can't bring them to a personal relationship with the Lord until they realize they need the Lord. And I'm sure your father really felt that way very strongly when he was there in solitary confinement month after month after month.
Yeah, he had lots of time to think, and he really saw it very, very clearly that this was the way to live. And he chose to love, not to hate, and he chose to forgive. And it really made a difference in his life, and he was able to reach out and help an awful lot of people. And as horrible as the prison experience was, he said, you know, that really was what made him come face to face with the Lord, and he found the Lord, and he was thankful for that.
And changed his life and then the lives of so many other people. And then ultimately, I'm sure your life and the lives of your brothers and sisters and so many people whose lives you've touched.
Yeah.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question for Carol, or if you'd like to know about how to get the book, how can people get copies of the book, or do you have a website, or is there any other source of information on your story?
The best way to order the book is from me. I'm selling them for $5 each. It was a book that was written in 1950. And you can, my email address is carolico@aol.com.
And how do you spell Ico?
It's carolaiko, and then it's @aol.com. And you can just order it directly from me. And then the website is the website that we have for the movie that we're trying to do. The movie we're going to try to, right now the working title is Forgiven. So the website is www.forgivenmovie.com. And there's more information on that website.
Well, it really sounds like it would be a wonderful story that could have a tremendous impact upon many people's lives, and especially, yeah. You know, it's not simply your father's story, but it's the story of this Japanese naval officer, Captain
Fuchida.
Fuchida, Captain
if
Fuchida.
If you could pray for us, we'd really, ask for your prayers, because there's lots that needs to come together for all of this to happen.
Well, of course, hopefully it's in God's will, and that will come to pass, and He can accomplish many things, even in Hollywood. And I sort of smile because, of course, Hollywood is not necessarily so anxious to do Christian films, but who knows? Certainly, there could be somebody who just sees the genius of this story, or somebody who really does believe, because there are believers in Hollywood, despite all the bad things that come out. Still, some magnificent stories have come out of Hollywood and really have touched so many lives.
And we really feel like if God wants it to happen, it'll happen. So we're just basing everything on that.
Okay, I guess the movie is going to be called Forgiven. It's going to be the story of these two men. One, of course, had been in the General Doolittle's raid on Japan, and the other, of course, who led the attack on Pearl Harbor. And of course, the total disillusionment at the end of the Second World War on the part of the Japanese military, who never seriously considered that they could be defeated, because after all, they were on God's side. So anyway, I think it's an amazing, amazing story, and it's a very, very touching book. It's easy to read, but of course, I don't think anybody could get through this book without already having a tremendous impact on them.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, how is your father now? Is he getting on in years and not able?
Yeah, he in November he's going to be 92 years old.
Oh boy!
Yeah. And he, it really, up till this last year, he's been going around talking in different churches and, you know, able to do quite a bit. But he's just, this last year, he's slowed down quite a bit and not able to do as much. He stays home a lot now.
Well, I think it's wonderful, you know, that he has been able to be active up at least until 91 years of age. And, of course, didn't he have a farm here when he came back to the United States for good?
Yeah, he had a little farm that he was tending to, but he, of course, you know, isn't working on that now, and they sold it a long time ago. And my mom is doing pretty good, and they care for each other and just have a real sweet, tender relationship, and they're living in a retirement place in Oregon, and really doing quite well. There's very sweet and tender to each other. It's really heartening to see all that.
And, of course, your mother went right along with this missionary work. In fact, she had always intended to be a missionary and to do God's work. And they met in Bible college, and, of course, the rest is history.
Yeah. They went to Seattle Pacific University, and they both met each other. And she had decided she wanted to be a missionary, but didn't really know what country. And, of course, when she met Dad and they fell in love, Dad was wanting to go back to Japan, then that kind of took care of that question.
But, of course, he had really to depend upon God for sustenance all this time. You know, he didn't have necessarily a home. Other people provided homes and provided the expenses so that he could preach God's word over there. And it really it must have made them totally dependent upon the Lord.
Yeah, they really, and they still are. They depend on the Lord for everything, and the Lord has taken really good care of them. And my dad's longevity is just a real witness to how well the Lord's taken care of him.
Well, at 92, and he's still, maybe can't be out preaching, but he's still there. And because I think it's a wonderful, wonderful story. Are you getting much exposure across America as you tell this?
A little bit. I think that's one of the reasons why we want to get a new book written and try to get this movie out, is we'd really like to open this up to a larger group that possibly, you know, wouldn't be reached, you know, people that maybe wouldn't go to church and hear it that way.
Well, I think it's very interesting. I mean, I've been doing Talk Radio for 10 years, and I really hadn't heard of this at all until one of our listeners called and said, you've got to get a hold of Carol Dixon and of course, get this story out. And so this is why we happened to call you. And I'm so glad we did. And, of course, we have your material on the movie Forgiven. But the book itself, a very, very touching, very, very touching story. Of course, a story of the brutality that your father had to endure. And then, of course, how was he able to rise above that and to actually express love towards the prison guards. And, of course, even many of these prison guards subsequently after the war came and visited him, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And they would come to our home. And when they had children, they'd bring the children, and then they brought the grandchildren. And one of the grandkids told my mom, "You're my American grandma." So they really became close. And
these were the prison guards in the prisons where your father had been, you know, incarcerated for that such a long period of time.
And one of them, you know, gave him the Bible. And he said he's really glad that he was able to do that and to help my father. They weren't all mean. There was a couple really nicer ones. But they developed quite a friendship with each other and would do things together. And one of them, went to the Philippines with my dad. They travel around together. And,
all right, fine. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners today?
Well, I'd just like to say, you know, if the best thing to do is to choose to love and to choose to forgive. And my dad's favorite Bible verse is 1 Corinthians 13 at the very end, where it says, love never fails. You cannot do the wrong thing if you choose love. That love will really help you get through the hard times and relationships with people. And choosing to forgive is really freeing yourself of a lot of burdens and anger and hate that you could carry on that would really destroy your life. And
well, thank you so very much. I guess it's been Carol Dixon. Her father, of course, was Jacob Schaeser, and it's a wonderful, wonderful story.
Is called AIDS, the Necessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-1 and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that for our listeners that we are having an all-day seminar that's on the 6th of November. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and of course it's going to start at 9 in the morning, and it's going to go all day, and it's going to be lunch served, and we do hope that many of you want to come. Well, we're expecting people from all over the country. We have quite a few already signed up from various parts of the country, and in the past we've had people from throughout the world, but of course we're going to be bringing in outside speakers. I've always enjoyed these yearly seminars. They're quite a bit of work to put on, but we get a chance to meet a lot of the people that we talk to on the radio, and of course maybe even meet some of the people you've heard discussed on the radio. There'll be the speakers. Joe Schimmel will be there. We'll be having Michael Shaw. We'll be having Bill Sardi, and I'll be talking, and I think we'll have a real good time. So if you can interested in coming, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Make your reservation. And of course your reservation includes your lunch, and we'll probably have a handout or seminars or something, or a syllabus. We haven't quite decided what we're going to do. But anyway, it should be a good time. It's an opportunity to meet people who are concerned about what's going on, and of course to learn, and of course to have access to the information that you need to reach others. Because the problem is, how can we convince people that there's really a problem out there? Well, when they see the documentation, our 4 tape sets, I think, are different than anything else that's available. Sometimes movies will touch people. Sometimes the syllabus as well. And as you see, for instance, the article out of the Chicago Tribune that's in our Iraq the Untold Story syllabus that tells actually the story that the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months, and we wouldn't let them, and the last 6 months of the war was unnecessary. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we were just mentioning to our listeners that we hope many of them will seriously consider coming to the November 6th seminar. If you're out across America, we hope you will as well. It's going to be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and a good time is going to be had by all. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to getting some of the other material we have. We've got a great video. It's called Iraq, the Untold Story. And with that comes a syllabus, and of course the syllabus has the documentation for the fact that all of the wars of the last century and immediately before were contrived. the Spanish-American War, why the American people were told why those wicked Spanish sunk the battleship Maine. And it was a lie. Of course, it cost 5,000 American lives, and of course, I don't know how many Filipino and lives of people in Cuba, but the war was fought for far different reasons than the American soldiers were ever allowed to know. And then later we found out, oh shucks, well it was a mistake of why actually it was an explosion inside the Maine, but well of course now we've got Philippines and we've got Cuba and we've got Puerto Rico and it's too late to go back again, but nobody ever asked who was responsible for lying to the American people. And then, of course, getting into the First World War. Oh, we had to get to the First World War. The Germans were so cruel, and they were so terrible, and they were cutting off the hands of little Belgian boys, and cutting off the breasts of Belgian women, and raping and ravishing, and it was all a lie. But repeated over and over and over again by the controlled media, and believe me, even back in 1915 and 1916 and 1917, the media in the United States was largely controlled, not as complete as it is today. Today, there are only six corporations that control almost all of the major media outlets. But back then, of course, there were still some independent newspapers where you could get the truth. But they were able, day after day, to eventually convince the American people we should hate the Germans. And just as we're being conditioned to hate the people in the Middle East today, after all, the terrible Arabs, and they're all followers of Osama bin Laden, it really isn't true at all. But on the other hand, they're doing everything they can over there in the Middle East with their television and their radio to get them to hate America. And, of course, this is how you get a major war going. And the same thing is going on in Pakistan and Iran and Syria to get the people to hate. Hate is so vital to make a war work. And we talked with Carol Dixon, the daughter of Jacob DeShazer, and she was in the book. It talks about how they got the Japanese really to hate the Americans initially in the war, early in the war. Of course, Doolittle flight was really only the fourth month of the war. And when the Americans were captured, the Japanese really didn't hate Americans, but by the end of the war, they were filled with hatred, just as we were filled with hatred for the Japanese. That's how you get a war going. And of course, if you've heard that wonderful quotation, comes from Bartlett, quotations from Plato, writing 2,350 years ago, said, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by treaty or by conquest, and there is nothing to fear, and then he's out of stirring up another enemy because he needs that to rally the people behind the leader. And that's really what it's all about. That's how wars are done. And, of course, we had the Second World War, but nobody ever talks about how we financed Adolf Hitler before and during the war. And that's covered and documented in the syllabus. And then, of course, the Korean War, of course, if you read General McCarthy, you find that we were helping the Chinese communists. We even put the 7th Fleet between Taiwan and the mainland so that Chinese communists could move two major armies up into Manchuria so they could come down and kill our boys. And the head of the Chinese communist armies, General Lin Piao, said, I never would have risked my men and my reputation and attacked the American forces if I had been guaranteed that Washington would restrain General MacArthur from attacking my lines of supply. The video, the 4-tape set, Iraq, the Untold Story, call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You need to get that syllabus. You need to get the documentation in your hands. You need to get the video. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.